A taste of Ireland with Discover Northern Ireland. Your next giant adventure is just a small step away. DiscoverNorthernIreland.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Hi, I'm Ed Finn, and you're very welcome to A Taste of Ireland. My special guest this evening is Howard Hastings, the Managing Director of the Hastings Hotel Group. Howard, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much, Ed. It's great to be here.
It's a very tough time for the hospitality business at the moment. We can't say it's not. How are you getting on? How are things?
Well, it's been quite a long summer, and then I thought we got through all that, but going around a second time, it doesn't make it any more exciting, but I suppose in terms of youngsters count the big sleeps until Christmas Day, we're counting the big sleeps until we can get reopened.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, it's looking fairly good for Christmas possibly, so that's kind of nice. I mean, I used to love coming up every year to the wonderful Christmas markets here in Belfast. Now, I know they are planning to do something very nice with the lights that are coming on now shortly, and there will be something, but like not the usual, unfortunately, with the times we're in.
I think for everyone it'll be a little bit different this year, but obviously people crave catching up with each other. The Zoom and the lockdown, I think, have run their course in terms of novelty value. And I think people are keen to spend a little bit more quality time with each other at Christmas. And so from Belfast's point of view and from a hospitality point of view, we're standing by for that.
A lot of people saying to me that they don't mind being locked down now if they can get the 2 weeks at Christmas, and they don't mind if they have to stay indoors for January, because January's not a great month for out and about anyway, I guess. So.
Absolutely.
So we'll see, Howard. Could you tell us a little bit about the history and the origins of the Hastings Hotel Group? I mean, you have you've hotels here all over Northern Ireland. You're under the Merrion Hotel down in Dublin as well. So just a little bit about the whole history of the group.
Well, we're very much a family business that would have been started by my grandfather. And he unfortunately passed away quite young when my father was only 12 in 1940. But his elder brother took on the business at that time, which was really around public houses in Belfast and in working class areas of Belfast. And so when my father finished his education, he went in with his brother and built up the public house chain, and then decided in the 1960s that they wanted to move from pubs into hotels. And so over the next few years, started to buy some pubs and divest, bought some hotels and divested of the pubs. And so of those early purchases, I think some people would be familiar with maybe the Culloden Hotel, which we bought 52 years ago. Then it was 11 bedrooms. Now it's just over 100 bedrooms. Then it had a restaurant, but no banqueting. But now it's got the banqueting and the spa and the Cultural Inn Grill Bar ground. So it's been a story of continuous reinvestment down the years. Possibly the other one that people might be familiar with of the early purchases is the Ballygally Castle Hotel, just outside Larne on the Causeway coastal route. So it's a 1625 castle originally, which again we've extended and developed down the years. It now has 60 bedrooms and is very popular, particularly with Americans looking for the castle experience.
In fact, I've actually stayed in both of those hotels that you've mentioned, and I think the Culloden was, am I right, that was an Archbishop's house before, or something's history there as well?
Absolutely.
Which is very interesting.
And my father did tell the story about when he first bought it, there was still a private chapel in the hotel. It's now the manager's office, and we always think when we come to budget time that divine intervention should mean that the budgeting is that much more precise at the Culloden, but the bishop had to come and have a service of deconsecration for the private chapel, and then history tells that they went for a drink afterwards.
Very good. I like that. And of course, the Ballygally Castle, I had a wonderful Game of Thrones afternoon tea there with Norman, of course, who's a bit of a legend out there. And I must say, they've had Game of Thrones door, which is magnificent as well.
Yes, we were very lucky. The Game of Thrones has been so very popular in Northern Ireland, but particularly for that parade of trees up in North Antrim that was featured in the first series. And the one of those fell over about 3 years ago, and it was a Tourism Ireland initiative to take the felled tree and to take it to a specialist woodworker who fashioned it into a series of doors. So they put these into different establishments, pubs, restaurants, places that tourists would go, and created a sort of passport system that the real thronies could follow some of the Game of Thrones sites by visiting the doors and getting their passports stamped. And so one of those is indeed at Ballygally Castle, because we are quite near to some of the Game of Thrones sites, both at Ballantoy Harbour and at the Dark Hedges, where the tree first came from.
I have that passport, Howard, myself. I'm sorry. I'm happy to admit, and I say, being a mad Thrones fan myself. Was your own background in hospitality before you got involved yourself in the Hastings Group?
I had a sort of passing background in hospitality, in the way that everybody growing up does their stint in bars and hotels. So when I was between school and university, summer jobs would have been at Cultural Inn in Stormont Hotel. But then actually I did a spell as a commis chef between school and university a long time ago. It was 1980, and I was in the Gresham Hotel in Dublin for 6 months on O'Connell Street under the chef Noel Cullen. I don't know whether any of your listeners will remember him. On the back of that, I actually did a bit of chefing in Stormont Hotel and in Ballygally Castle as well for summer jobs afterwards, before I went on to university. And so at university, I studied law in Nottingham, and then I went to London and did accountancy and qualified with KPMG as an accountant as well. So I have that sort of mixture of business skills coming from the law and the accountancy. But before all that started, I did get a few fish scales under my fingernails chefing at the Gresham.
Very good. And it's still going strong. What's it like running a hotel group like as big as the Hastings Group?
And people say it's quite a large business, but actually it's a series of small businesses, really. And I think if you were starting from scratch, it would seem like a very huge undertaking. But because we've grown up with it, as the business has expanded, it doesn't feel quite as onerous and daunting as that. I'm very lucky to have some of my sisters are all working in the business as well, and in marketing, in sales, in events roles, and in head office. And then also some very talented managers in charge of the hotels themselves. So I think I try as far as possible to let them get on with it. And the more I do that, the more they seem to enjoy the lack of interference on my part.
Very good. A hands-off approach to a certain extent. Howard, the latest hotel that you have built here recently, the Grand Central, I mean, that was the location of another well-known iconic hotel here in Belfast beforehand. And I mean, it's absolutely stunning. I've enjoyed a cocktail in the tallest cocktail bar in Ireland, I think it is. Can you tell us, that was an amazing project.
There was a Grand Central Hotel in Belfast before ours, not in the same location. The original Grand Central Hotel was on down Royal Avenue where the Castle Court Shopping Centre is now. But the building had been razed to the ground and the new shopping centre built, and the name had been lost to the city. So when we bought this tall building, which was actually the site of an old linen warehouse originally, on which someone had built a very tall office block, and we decided to turn it into a hotel, we canvassed a number of names, but the Grand Central was the one that kept floating to the top. It may be a little immodest to name your hotel from scratch the Grand Central, but because it's such a tall building at 23 stories and really does dominate the Belfast skyline. We thought we would get away with it.
Another hotel, of course, very near to that as well, the Europa, where I've stayed, and with the Belfast Arts Festival a few times. And I mean, that's such an iconic hotel as well. And I mean, an institution just by the Opera House there.
Absolutely. And I suppose we're very lucky that the Europa, so well known, has retained a huge loyalty from its customer base. I guess if we were nervous at all about undertaking the Grand Central project, is we thought that customers, the risk was they would move from the Europa to the Grand Central and I'd still have one full hotel and I'd be left with another empty one. But that's not proved to be the case, that the Grand Central has found its own new markets, which is lovely. And but it, what is so satisfying is that the Europa has such a loyal following.
And I remember when I stayed in the Grand Central, Howard, a couple, I suppose, would be I mean, pre-COVID now, you had a very amazing mix of people staying there. And I suppose, I mean, I know Julie, your sister, who's very good at the marketing and everything, but it was seemed to be that Belfast has become such a melting pot now. And I know Game of Thrones has helped this, from people that are fans as well. But it was really interesting to see the way that you'd catered for everybody there, and you know, the different, even their different tastes and dietary requirements. Obviously, it's an amazing undertaking, isn't it, when you're reaching out to people from all over the world to come and stay in your hotel.
Yeah, no, and I think that people find it's curious that Belfast is such a cosmopolitan city, because people come over from Great Britain and say, well, sure, it's only the size of Nottingham or Bristol or Newcastle or Leeds. And who wouldn't see that range and variety of customers? But if you think of it on the island of Ireland terms, Belfast is one of the most likely places for a tourist to come once they've been to Dublin. And so to that extent, we're a wee bit like what Edinburgh is in GB. It's somewhere you go when you've been to London. And so we've been staggered by the range of nationalities that have come to Belfast in recent years. I suspect that in terms of the Chinese visitors, we're particularly lucky because they are so very much attracted to the Titanic Belfast. And the one of the reasons for that is that the Chinese leader, but one, was a huge fan of the film. It's a Titanic movie. And so if you do meet a Chinese tourist anywhere in Ireland, if you say to them Titanic, they will parrot back to you Jack and Rose. And they really have taken the movie to their hearts. And so therefore it is a must visit location for them when they come on holidays. And so Belfast is the beneficiary of that.
Howard, that brings us nicely along, right, to your first choice of music this evening, Vangelis, Conquest of Paradise.
Yes, I suppose this is a track I have found myself playing somewhat more in recent months. As I said earlier on, it was a bit of a long summer and you didn't know quite when you would get reopened and the weather was fantastic. I walked an awful lot and I'm lucky enough to live on the coast of Belfast Lough and can walk along the shores there and see the bird life and the sea life and everything that's going on. But on days when it was a little duller than I thought it would be and the sun was shining and there was no customers in the hotels and it wasn't conducive to idyllic happiness. Well, the Vangelis track, actually, I thought sort of picked me up a wee bit, gave me a bit of hope that we can get through this.
A taste of Ireland with Discover Northern Ireland. Your next giant adventure is just a small step away. DiscoverNorthernIreland.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're listening to A Taste of Ireland, and my special guest this evening is Howard Hastings. Howard, have you noticed amazing changes in Belfast over the last 20 years?
Oh, very much so. I came back to Northern Ireland in 1989. I'd been away, as I said earlier, to university and doing my accountancy in England. And at that time, not only were our troubles still on, but it really constrained what people wanted to do to go out and enjoy themselves. My wife tells the story better than I do about when we came home first, and there was no Sainsbury's, there was no Tesco's, there was none of that existed in those days. And so there was a very large supermarket on the edge of town, and when you went to the exotic vegetables counter, that's where you could find your courgettes, and that in that we regarded something as commonplace today as courgettes, as exotic back in those days, just speaks a little bit to how far we've come. I'm guessing, though, that the big thing is the changes since we got beyond the troubles, and for people of my generation that have lived through it, we can still recall some of it. But for me, the key is that someone of Rory McIlroy's age, he was born on or around the point of the ceasefires. So anyone who's Rory McIlroy's age or younger knew none of it and wanted to grow up in a society that they wanted to shape for themselves. And that speaks to the renaissance of a culture of music, a culture of food, things that we didn't necessarily enjoy back at that stage.
Yeah, and I mean, the explosion, even when you look at, I mean, obviously Game of Thrones, and you look at the tourism, the current campaign that Tourism NI are running about Embrace a Giant Spirit, which has really brought so many people here as well. Of course, Titanic. But there's so much that has happened. And I mean, you know, you when you come up now, you drive up and, you know, it's amazing. It's so easy to do everything. It's an hour and a half down the road from Dublin. I mean, there's people this year, people from Cork and Limerick that kind of never thought they'd holiday. You know, they go to maybe Spain or Portugal, came up here for a week. It's so lovely to hear that, isn't it?
And I suppose one of the things is that the troubles kept people from the Republic of Ireland from coming north. It was a huge, even though they lived close and were neighbours on the island, it was it dissuaded people. And a couple of years ago, they did a survey that estimated that there are still 2.5 million people on the island of Ireland in the Republic who have never visited the north. So we've got a huge opportunity there to welcome them. And so that's why I was excited in the first place that we started putting our product together. Titanic Belfast made an enormous difference. 900,000 visitors a year, second only to the Guinness Storehouse in terms of paid visitor attractions. Did a lot of work in Derry, Londonderry, the walled city. The Giant's Causeway Visitor Centre was burnt down in the early 1990s. It was put back together again and reopened with its new visitor centre under the National Trust management in 2012. Obviously, the Mourns and the heritage there is something that's growing and developing. And for the ecclesiastical heritage, obviously St. Patrick and all that speaks to, we're the only island in the universe that everyone stops for a day every year to celebrate. So we have to make the most, and we have a lot of patrician heritage in Northern Ireland. But it's not enough just to have the products. It was about animating those as well. And I think when we started, when with the MTV European Music Awards celebrations, that was 2011, we did the City of Culture in Derry, Londonderry in 2013. The Fla Ciol came north for the first time. I mean, how exciting that was. What a huge opportunity for people who will follow that franchise all around the island to come and experience Derry, maybe unwittingly, but they said, we must come back. That was the key for us. Since then, you know, the Giro d'Italia was another excuse. We had the Irish Open come to Portrush for the first time. And then last year we had the Open. Again, all magnets, the event-led tourism is what's making it happen. And then, as you say, it's not just about all the rosy apples in the front of the basket. It's about some of those other things that you're talking about, the Marble Arch Cave, the National Trust property. And people say, I didn't spend long enough, I need to go again. And because they've now realised that the roads are so very good that they can be here so very quickly, it's an easy weekend break destination for anyone on the island now.
Yeah, and as well as that, Howard, I think the beaches even, you know, I mean, if something, even the whole that Newcastle area and along the Antrim coast, I mean, as well, I mean, it's just amazing stuff.
And the scenery is so different between the two. The golf courses offer a different challenge. Yes, there's lots of wind, there's lots of water, but the terrain is very different between the two. So it's a completely different experience going walking in the Mourns or going walking along the North Antrim coast as well. And all within really quite a short distance of each other. And I suppose part of Ireland's attraction is that you have that variety of landscape right across the piece. We were down in the Burren, County Clare this summer, so many people from Northern Ireland maybe go to Donegal, maybe go to Dublin, don't often venture as far south and west as County Clare and County Cork, but this was the year to do it, and in compensation, so many people from the south came up to see us as well.
As you said, Clare there, I mean, that beautiful walk from Ebdoolin to Liscannor, I mean, and the Kilkee Cliff Path Walk, and you can take the ferry out actually and see the Cliffs of Moher from the boat is amazing stuff. So
this was the year we did exactly that walk and got to the Cliffs of Moher Visitor Centre, and where there should be 40 coaches sitting there with another 20 queued up to get in, there were none. And so everyone was local, everyone was enjoying themselves, and there was no sense of panic or crush. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So anyone who's taken their staycation this year has been spoiled.
And that was very nice actually as well. I mean, you know, I love America and I love Americans coming here as well, but it was so interesting this year when I did a lot of travelling around Ireland and the north of Ireland that you got to speak to people, all locals, and we actually, because usually you'd be spending time talking to people from international guests. That was really nice actually. It was different as well, wasn't it?
Well, and it was, in some ways, it was a wee bit like a sort of national gathering, because you then realise how very much more you have in common, and stories that exist in your parish have resonance in whichever parish you're visiting on some other part of the island as well, which was fantastic.
The hospitality, I suppose, as well, it's in our nature here on the island of Ireland. You know, we're just very welcoming, and I think that is even more so up here sometimes.
I think what we do so very, very well, the unsung piece is the people. People who come for leisure breaks, they might sign up because they want to see a jurisdiction, but they go away talking about the people they met, the spontaneous things that happened to them when they were on their holiday. And for me, what a visitor wants more than anything else is to go somewhere where they can see the locals enjoying themselves. And so in so very many of the village, town, city festivals that we have, any visitor arriving in when that's going on, it's so easy for them to kind of join in. We do that really, really well here, and some of them can be really, really small, some of them can be quite huge. It's very hard to spend any length of time here without coming across some excuse to see the locals enjoying themselves already.
In your role, I mean, what is your favourite part of the whole job?
My day job role, in some ways you're dealing with very big projects. You talked about when we were building the Grand Central Hotel, a really huge undertaking. Other days you're dealing with suppliers and you might be fighting over tuppence halfpenny for the price of a pound of butter. But through it all, it's all people, whether it's the people who you work with, whether it's your customers, whether it's your suppliers, you know, all the way through I couldn't have a job that didn't have that. A day at the computer screen is not a good day.
You need to be a people person, with the fact that you're interacting with, I mean, so many people that you have working for you. I suppose your team of people.
Well, and I suppose I'm in the business long enough to have seen people grow and develop with the company, and that's really, really satisfying to see people who you remember a few years ago taking their first footsteps in hospitality, growing and developing. It's very, very satisfying that you can see week in, week out them giving customers wonderful experiences, and they write back and tell you in the year of TripAdvisor you can do nothing without it being reported back.
Is that something that's difficult, the TripAdvisor? A lot of people love it, a lot of people hate it, a lot of people don't believe it anymore, you know, with the way the social media is these days.
Well, I think you have to kind of take it in the round. I think people who are motivated to contribute to such things don't say my visit was fine. It was either extraordinarily good, or there was something they wanted talk to you about. So within that, the people who respond are motivated to respond by something good or bad. That's we have to celebrate and find out the things that are good and market those. If we're not marketing the things that people are already telling us that we do well, then we're missing a trick. And then how do you, if there's any regularity of shortcoming, well, how do we fix that?
That brings us along nicely to your second choice of music this evening, which is a band I love, The Cranberries and Dreams.
Yeah, there's a wee bit of a story behind this because obviously it was through 94 we had the ceasefires and we built up to the Good Friday Agreement in, I think it was 98, which led to the formation of the North-South cross-border bodies, of which it was almost an afterthought at the time, but it's been the most signally successful of all of them, has been Tourism Ireland. And at that stage, it didn't enjoy the marketing muscle that it does today. And so for the first time, they had production values to make the best possible adverts. And they wanted to get away from the image that was held in some parts of the world that Ireland was still a little bit about shillelaghs and shamrocks, because modern Ireland has moved on a long way. Even by the year 2000, the impact of all that European investment was starting to be felt. And so the soundtrack that they put over the adverts, and I think you can probably remember the horses riding along the beach, the Galway hookers, all that sort of stuff, the bride on the Carrick Reed rope bridge with her veil trailing in the air, but the soundtrack over it was Cranberries, and it spoke to the sort of Ireland that we were all excited to bring to market.
A taste of Ireland with Discover Northern Ireland. Your next giant adventure is just a small step away. DiscoverNorthernIreland.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
You're listening to A Taste of Ireland, and my special guest this evening is Howard Hastings, MD of the Hastings Hotel Group. Howard, what is special about staying in a Hastings hotel?
We like to think we can offer the warmth of welcome, but then so does everybody else. So we have to work very hard at doing it better. We're very fortunate that we have a fantastic retention of our staff who then get to know each other as a team, get to know how to work with each other. And I think so often that comes back in kind of customer feedback that they didn't feel that the experience they had in our hotel was transactional. You know, I've paid my money, so I'm going to get A, B, C, D, E. But they felt it was by nature of a relationship. The experience was much more than something, you know, two bread and butter. It was a holistic experience, if you like, from when they arrived until when they had to say farewell.
And whose idea was it about the ducks?
Oh, I have to give credit to my eldest sister, Julie. She's our marketing director, and it started a long time ago. If I'd known it was going to grow into what it has, I might have thought twice about it. But so many people take the ducks from our bathrooms as a memento, and it's great because if it unlocks in your mind the experience that you had, it's super, because we started off with relatively straightforward ducks, but then every year we issue special edition ducks that speak to the locations that the hotels are in. So I mean, we've had a Titanic duck, we've had a Game of Thrones duck, we've had a St. Patrick's Day duck, we've had Ulster rugby ducks. So many different elements, and obviously repeat offenders like yourself, Ed, probably have really quite a large collection now based on your number of stays.
I have to put my hands up and say, I think yes, I have Chinese ducks, I have Game of Thrones ducks. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit addictive, to be honest.
Yeah, well, for the Chinese in particular, their ducks are obviously red. and then they tell me that says ni hao on them, but I've no way of absolutely knowing, I'm afraid.
Yes, absolutely, ni hao, very good. And I must say that I just think it was such a lovely touch, because even other journalist friends of mine, you know, there's amazing competition about, oh, you have that duck, do you? Oh, right, you know, surreptitiously excusing themselves, you know, while they visit the loo and stuff, stealing my ducks. Yes. But fabulous, really. I mean, it was a great concept. Aside from that, Howard, the food, I have to say, in my experience as well, and what I've heard from lots of other people, is very, very, very amazing quality food. I mean, your breakfast raw was really good. And, you know, you've so much quality stuff there. I mean, is that all a massive undertaking as well?
Well, it is to get it right. I suppose we don't set ourselves out to do the Michelin star cooking. That's for others that you've been speaking to who do it so very well. But I think what we like to do is to source local, to source the very best of quality local ingredients. And finding those over a period has been a bit of a challenge, but it's also been great fun. So probably the two bits of your breakfast that aren't local will be the orange juice and the coffee. So although we changed our coffee supplier in recent times to one where it's ground locally, the tea provider blends the tea locally. So even in cases where we don't actually grow the stuff here, we do have a local hand on the quality of what we can produce. And it's been great fun to go and meet some of the suppliers. We've got some really passionate distributors who will go the extra mile to find small local suppliers for us. I went to see a little while ago our egg man, and he was able to say to me, Howard, when I got your order, it gave me the confidence to put on an extra hen house. Now, he comes from a place called Carador, which no one will have heard of, none of your listeners, and it's quite near Grey Abbey, which I suspect quite a few more of your listeners will never have heard of. Middle of nowhere, and we're creating employment in areas, and it's a family business, it's third generation family business, creating employment in areas like that, but it's only about 10 miles from Belfast, and so the local sourcing and its route to market is very immediate, very direct. We're lucky enough to get the yogurt from the Clandyboy estate. Some of your listeners may have heard that the owner of the Clandyboy estate, Lindy Dufferin, passed away last week. She started Clandyboy yogurt when she came back to Northern Ireland in the late 1980s. She took on a Jersey Holstein herd. Nobody had thought that this was doable ever before. She herself was a painter, and she painted the labels on the retail pots. So she claims that her paintings have had a wider audience than any other contemporary artist. But real high quality yogurt that has regularly featured in the Great Taste Awards. And we're able to avail of that as part of the breakfast offering.
We were chatting earlier there about people that haven't actually, we'd say, been up before, you know, up from even from the south. If I was to say to you, give us a little itinerary where you could really have a first-time experience, that would be pampering yourself, of course.
Is this a free hit to describe a driving tour of Northern Ireland, staying in Hastings hotels throughout?
Well, I mean, I suppose it does sound like that, doesn't it?
That's too kind.
But I mean, if you were, you know, just, you know, because I suppose we're simply, we were talking earlier, but if you were to give someone like a two or three or four days, you know, in terms of sightseeing, really, you know, yes. I mean, you take it, what would you say to them?
Well, I suppose if I was looping around, you can go, let's go anti-clockwise, and let's assume that you're starting from Dublin. No reason why so many of your listeners will not be starting from there, obviously. But whenever you get to Newry, turn right and drive along the coast of South Down. Don't go the slow road that takes you from Newry to Warren Point to Ross Trevor to Kilkeel. rounding the foothills of the Mourne Mountains, taking in, so you've got the Mourne Mountains on your left-hand side, you've got the Irish Sea on your right-hand side. Let's picture that the sun is glinting off the azure blue waters, the Riviera of the Western Europe, if I might. And you'll know you've arrived because at the end of that journey is Slieve's Honoured Hotel. I didn't put it there. It was the railway company that put it there.
Yeah, well, it was huge ago. With the Victorians, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. it was a big deal.
Opened in 1870, and the railway built the line that's the Belfast and County Down Railway. Newcastle is the terminus. But even when they first built the hotel, they built a spur off the main railway line so the coal wagon could deliver the coal for the boilers right to the very, very back door of the hotel. It was built with about 120 bedrooms, and every bedroom had its own fireplace, and it was someone's job to put a bucket of coal in every room every day. That sort of Victorian grandeur. It was built of sandstone, fantantastic for the look. Obviously, it takes a bit of more maintenance than the modern building materials. It doesn't have cavity walls because they didn't have those in those days, so it's big. 4 foot thick walls built on effectively the beach, a dramatic setting. So many times people say, "Oh, can I have the sea view?" But you don't just get a sea view; you get the mountain view as well, and you get the golf course view. So it really is a kind of good starting point. Whether you're, and obviously I don't know whether it's with you, but I've noticed a lot more during pandemic sea swimming. Has really taken off. Well, if you're on the basis that I do think that a lot of sea swimmers,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm very happy that they do it. I haven't actually ventured in myself. So you can do that. You can go walking in the mornings. You can play golf. And there's so many other little smaller industries have now cropped up around. There's microbreweries that you can visit. The e-bikes. I mean, who knew how good e-bikes would be? Now, there are some people who like Lycra and do the full cycling thing, but for the more leisurely, we can get you e-bike tours of the Mourne as well.
Oh, yeah, brilliant. I cycled in Gstaad, very posh in Switzerland, and very steep inclines, and I was very happy we had the e-bike, I can tell you, because it was like, yeah, I wouldn't have been able to do it at all otherwise. Absolutely. And Howard, finally, you're an expert on tourism. Are you optimistic now for the future?
People's desire to travel is undiminished by what has happened this year. There's no one that you meet isn't dying to travel again. And so I do foresee that whilst the nature of business may change a little bit, and I actually see that as an opportunity. I think people sometimes have realized during lockdown that they're more acutely aware of their bucket list. Of just not going the first place the brochure takes them, or just not going the place that the price seems like a real bargain. If we've only got so many summers or winters left, let's go where we need to go. And the fantastic thing about Ireland is it's on so many people's bucket list. And so as we come out of this lockdown, I'm really keen that Ireland is able to take advantage of the upswing in tourism, that we gain market share coming out of it. Now, you ask me, am I an optimist or otherwise? I think I've answered your question.
absolutely. And I think people will be delighted to hear that. Howard, it's been great to chat to you. Your final piece of music this evening, I think, is very optimistic as well. The Proclaimers, I'm on my way.
From misery to happiness. I can't deny that being closed is something that makes me less than happy, but there's a great days ahead, and this is the track that puts a spring in my step.
Howard Hastings, it has been a great pleasure to have you on the show this evening. Thank you so much.
And thank you.